previously we explained that financial institutions seem to have no choice but to accept and adapt to the anticipated slew of financial regulatory reforms and to begin making assessments on how these reforms will impact their business models. We identified three strategic themes, the first of which, reforming business models in an uncertain environment, we explored in more detail. We will now talk about the second strategic theme, but we will focus mainly on three points with respect to how we can really broadly define what to expect with respect to on capital planning and overall risk management. So there are three considerations. Number one is there is a greater move to more binding Pillar 1 regulations. Number two is a retrenchment from internal models. And number three is we should expect more intrusive supervision. But take note, we are using supervision as opposed to regulation. Let's start with the first, which is the move to more binding Pillar 1 regulations. The regulatory requirements are becoming more binding towards Pillar 1 capital and liquidity regulations, and there is less room for Pillar 2 assessments of banks' internal measurement of risk. Under Basel II, particularly during the 2009 to 2011 period, when internal capital adequacy assessment process as a regime was taking root among Philippine banks, the internal measure of risk, capital, and liquidity served as the constraint. Going forward, the regulatory requirement will trump these internal measures and lead to significant overlaps between the minimum and internally assessed capital adequacy and planning ranges. So meaning between the ICAAP and the regulatory capital levels, we are expecting a greater wedge. Well, at least that was the view at the time. Starting 2018, however, and we will cover this under the discussion on the science of IFRS and the art of Basel, we are starting to take the view that where previously CET1 is the new, or rather CET is the new car, under the somewhat consolidated Basel and IFRS regime, measures like the ECL or the expected credit loss are becoming the new capital regime. And that raises important implications on how we should view and even account for the capital charge under the ARWA or risk-weighted asset regime. Now let's go to the second consideration, which is the overall observation of a retrenchment from internal models. Within Pillar 1 regulations, simpler, more standardized approaches are being considered either by replacing the internal model approaches, introducing a floor, or requiring additional benchmarks. Examples where internal modeling has been scaled back include the treatment of securitizations held in the trading book, the introduction of a floor under the correlation trading book, and limited reliance on internal models for credit valuation adjustment calculations. And perhaps we will see more of this being exported as well to the resurging instruments like repo transactions. Recent discussions have focused on simplifying the risk-based frameworks of Basel II and the role that a simpler leverage ratio should play in relation to the risk-based framework. This may, however, place an additional wedge between how banks measure risk internally and what they must report externally. And we've previously alluded to that earlier. Will this retrenchment from internal models affect the moves of Philippine banks to transition to advanced approaches for their credit and operational risks? The quick answer is no. On the contrary, we see the internal models increasingly used in planning tools, particularly for strategic and risk-based capital planning. For instance, the approaches used for the micro risk models in credit and concentration risks will be the same when applying this in the macro but flow-based models in the strategic balance sheet. Moved forward to the present, these internal models are also used, and as to whether it is beneficial or harmful, it depends on what school of thought you're taking. They are also taking root in the provisioning and impairment exercises, which we will now be reframing as the ECL calculations. ECL calculations would pertain to both the models and the estimation approaches. A nuanced difference is that under the regulatory and internal capital adequacy systems, the approach involves a bottom-up aggregation of risks, while under the top-down full balance sheet simulation approach, the strategic balance sheet acts as the starting point. We believe that both approaches will become clearly distinct, yet still interdependent under the Basel III regime, and will be used both for capital planning and in support of strategy and the business. The motivation for using internal models will shift from capital optimization or savings to more precise and robust measurement and management of risks as part of the decision support or decision modeling processes. All these will be part of the strategic balance sheet management, or SBSM, which is the answer to the banking industry's question on what is next after ICAAP. So when you fuse the SBSM and the ICAAP, which essentially will answer the questions as to if I desire to grow my balance sheet, what will be the level of capital requirement to support that growth? And in that situation, the decision will involve expanding or investing in capital capacity, which would include access to capital. Now, if this is also related with the stress testing exercise, so from the capital saving to the precise and robust measurement and management of risks, and with stress testing, it will be very clear that there will be what we call capital traps and capital drags. On the presumption that an institution has a really strong stress testing mechanism, it may be subject to regulatory acceptance and approval. It may be proper to release these capital traps. As to whether it will be used for deployment or to be used to offset other risks, it can be reframed to say that stress testing, counterintuitively, could actually be an economic policy stimulus, although that would be the subject of a big debate. And that's something we can cover offline. And finally, we will talk about more intrusive supervision. Supervisory stress tests are displacing bank-specific ones as the dominant standard for establishing capital adequacy above the minimum regulatory requirements. A similar trend is expected to emerge with liquidity. This poses new challenges for how banks set incentives for business lines and whether to use measures such as economic capital or to default to the regulatory constraints, which may not be optimal from a relative risk-reward perspective. A related issue is on rising host supervisory requirements. Pre-crisis, the focus of supervisors was on consolidated risk measurement, management, and home country consolidated supervision. Post-crisis, however, supervisors are demanding that banks assess and report risks on a legal entity basis and ensuring that capital and liquidity are available within the host jurisdiction. This trend will be influenced by how successful supervisors and banks are in their efforts to achieve global coordination of recovery and resolution plans for cross-border banks. In the Philippine context, we have seen that there is a greater subsidiarization of foreign bank branches and also the imposition of more quality retained, high quality and retained capital. The direction has now shifted from a capital view to one where it's more strategic, meaning the regulators, without intending to interfere on the direction and business plans of foreign banks, they are now starting to really assess where this capital will be deployed or will be used optimally. And the subtext there is whether there is already a strategic drift. Banks clearly need to develop and maintain capability to manage regulatory change across the enterprise. While much of the implementation effort will continue to be driven by the lines of business most directly affected, banks are establishing core teams to coordinate planning and ensure enterprise-wide consistency across multiple aspects of the regulatory changes. These teams are also responsible for maintaining a strategic view on what the new paradigm and operating model will look like, monitoring the transition of projects into ongoing capabilities. These efforts need to be overseen by boards, which will be mainly responsible for making regulatory management both a governance and a strategic agenda, not just a compliance function. Boards are responsible for proactively engaging regulators and policymakers on both current and emerging supervisory expectations, distilling any observed or emerging regulatory thinking, and ensuring that these views are captured, processed, and synthesized in the enterprise-wide regulatory management process. Intensive supervision has to be understood in the context of macroprudential regulation. Under this approach to financial regulation, the overriding philosophy is to ensure that the financial system is stable and serves its role of promoting growth in the real economy. We will discuss some more macroprudential regulation in our next broadcast.